The Football Show on Off the Ball.
In association with the faster than ever Boyle Sports app, with hundreds of pre-live and in-play football markets. Download it now. Boyle Sports. Time to play.
I'm prepared to do anything I can
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
All right. Dan McDonnell of the Irish Independent is with us. Good evening.
Hi, Dave. How are things?
We're going to chat to Graeme Hunter later in about 20 minutes' time for his thoughts ahead of the Champions League final between Real and Liverpool on Saturday. So you're heading out to Abbottstown with all of your hack mates.
Hack mates, yeah. Travel separately. Travel in an entourage.
Little in van, a convoy.
Little press wagon on the front of it. Yeah.
And you're thinking, look, we haven't heard from Martin O'Neill for a couple of weeks.
Well, we actually have. So that was the thing. You know, he's done a few things with the squad announcement and stuff like that. But generally the first day of camp.
Right.
As such.
You think he'll throw in one or two interesting lines?
O'Neill will be there, but yeah, he probably didn't have a huge amount to say on top of what he said recently. He's spoken about the squad. We spoke to him in Glasgow on Sunday. Got a little bit with him afterwards as well. Mentioned he might play Shane Supple and stuff. So, in fairness, you know, people complain. Access has been quite good the last couple of weeks. But still, you expect he might be the one that speaks the first day.
And then you see Roy Keane walking down
strolling the aisle. Across the concourse, coming towards us. Walks into the room. Someone actually made a bit of a crack about, geez, you know what, it was 16 years ago this week as he was walking past. And he sort of laughed.
To him?
Yeah, sort of.
Really?
It was Baldy. Yeah, Baldy.
Who was that?
I couldn't possibly out them.
Oh, I have to find that out. I have an idea in my head who it might be.
Yeah.
I'll ask it in the next ad break.
You could be right. But just a casual comment, but we didn't really get into discussing that.
But he just laughed it off.
Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah, so he was relaxed enough. And but Roy Keane is generally, you know, Roy Keane is Roy Keane. You know, there's always a sort of a box office element, whether you like him or whether you don't. And he spoke at length today. So, I mean, it was good value, I suppose, in many respects. You know, whatever Roy Keane does in his career and whatever highs he may be experiencing in his own career, be it at Sunderland or whether lows at Ipswich or whether he's out of work or whether he's with Ireland or whatever it might be, when Roy Keane speaks, people will still be inclined to just sit up and listen and hear what he has to say. So, yeah, he was in open enough form today. Hence, I arrived here around 30 seconds ago after finishing a bit of work. So there
you go.
You
literally just walked in the door, sat down and started talking. Sometimes I forget we're in to our third campaign under this manager team. And I don't think any of us expected Roy Keane to still be the assistant manager at this stage, because there was always talk linking him with either a job as a manager elsewhere or another assistant manager's role as he had at Villa Park. And yet here we are, and all that talk seems to have gone away. We are in June, or heading towards June, where a lot of managerial appointments are going to be made. There's a lot of clubs that are seeking somebody new at all levels of the English Football League, Scotland as well. And there's absolutely zero talk about Roy Keane leaving his job.
Yeah, it is unusual. When you think that before he even had a campaign, he was linked with the job at Celtic, wasn't it? And we had that night in Fulham, I think it was, where Ireland played Italy there. I'm not sure if you were there at that time, but like the real chat was that he could be gone before it even begins. And now you are right. I guess maybe with O'Neill ultimately, now, you know, he did go to Villa for a while, it must be mentioned as well. But what you have with O'Neill and Stoke and turning down a Premier League job, I mean, I think it seems hollow now to link O'Neill with, say, moderate Championship clubs when he probably has turned down a Premier League gig. You know, I think there is a point for him where it's sort of not a bad old job, really, you know. And we do have Euro 2020 in Dublin, which could be pretty special if Ireland make it there. For all the international football has its highs and its lows again, you know, Ireland playing a major tournament in Dublin would be possibly better than most things we've done before, you know, international football-wise. So I guess that probably is intriguing for them. But maybe if Ireland had qualified for the World Cup and beaten Denmark, you know, the stock would have soared for all concerned, and we mightn't be having this discussion. I must say, it is always strange this week, this international week, because obviously, and we're going to probably spend more time maybe talking about the Champions League final, because we're in the middle of Champions League final week, and it always coincides with an Irish international gathering, which sort of, like, I can trace Champions League finals back to like various places I've been on Ireland camps, like the John Terry miss. I think, you know, watching that in Portugal, it was Trapattoni's first training camp as manager, and a couple in America and so on. That, you know, for Keane, in a strange way, I guess, you know, the you know, European football, world football's elite, the eyes are all centred on Ukraine this weekend, like where he would have been expected as a player to be. And now he's assistant manager of an international side that's not going to the World Cup. You know, it is strange in a way. Yeah. Yet I suppose the power of his personality means that when he speaks, it'll still always compete for column inches and headlines and on the airwaves with anything else that's going on.
Yeah, well, he did speak at length today, as you've said. A couple of interesting selections in the squad, a couple of the uncapped players in particular, Shane Supple, who would have been at Portman Road when Roy Keane was Ipswich Town manager. And we know kind of the story that Shane Supple just decided he was in a position and a headspace where he wanted to walk away from the professional game. And here he is being named in the international squad. It's astonishing, really.
It is probably one of the... not underselling it, like, it is one of the most remarkable, I think, sports stories of recent times, particularly if he ends up involved and playing at some stage, which is still, you would say, it's probably more unlikely than likely. But when you consider he walked away from the sport for 6 years, when you consider that the only reason he came back to play football was he was involved with coaching a goalkeeper. He had a goalkeeping academy he was part of running. And Crumlin United in 2015, I think they had a problem with their goalkeeper, either it was injured or leaving the club. And they asked Supple, would he come back and play? He said, oh, not so sure. They offered him a deal on rent for facilities for his academy if he could come and play. All of a sudden, he came back and played. Yeah. And that stroke of fate, really, you know, if that Crumlin goalkeeper hadn't suffered any issues,
yeah, it's a real sliding
may not have ever come back to the game.
Yeah.
And he ends up at Bowes and so on. And it is interesting. They have put a bit of work, it sounds, into, you know, scouting Supple, the Ireland camp, particularly Seamus McDonagh more so maybe than anyone else. And they've watched Bowes more than once and they've thought, hey, this guy's not bad. And,
which is encouraging,
isn't
it? They watch
them closely.
That is what they're up to in the background. We have accused Irish manager teams of the past of maybe not paying enough attention to the League of Ireland. Let's listen to Keane talking about Supple being involved in the training camp.
No, I'm sure he's delighted. Obviously, just met him there briefly before training. He was walking with Seamus, and you know, football's a small world. It's nice to get back walking over the next few days. And obviously, he's got a club game. It's been well documented that Shane obviously wanted to step back, obviously, from professional football in England. And it was sad. I remember like it was yesterday, but he was also... He certainly wasn't one for changing his mind, and I'm sure he doesn't regret it. And it's nice to be involved working with him again the next few days, and I look forward to it because he's obviously came across a really nice lad.
He said he wanted to thank you for what you did for him at the time. Was it a difficult decision for you to allow him to leave, or did you ever think that you could help him through it?
Yeah, well, obviously, we gave him all those options at the time, you know, take a bit of time off, whatever, and but... I suppose what I admired about Shane, he obviously had made his mind up, and sometimes you have to read that situation, and there was no point in trying to, I suppose, make it any worse for him. And he clearly made his mind up, and he seems to be enjoying his football, and obviously enjoy living in Ireland. And as I said, you've got to admire that as well for a young person. It's a brave decision to step away from potentially great life, I suppose, living in England and working top level, because clearly he's a talented boy, but he decided it wasn't for him. And again, I admired him for that.
Do you think people don't understand the pressures that can surround football clubs? There appears to be a glamour with it, but it isn't always that case.
Well, there's a lot of pitfalls to being a footballer. Of course there is. I think it's certainly probably been highlighted over the last few years with... obviously a lot of ex-players, which we know having difficult times once they're finished with the game, and obviously players when they're playing at club level, would it be disappointment with, particularly I think when players get injured, they can't settle off the field, etc. So I think a lot of people are aware, I suppose, of the pitfalls, and but obviously I don't think that was anything that Shane was focused on. I think he just wanted to come back and live in Ireland and focus on a different type of career, but obviously continue playing football, and I think he wanted to play the GAA. And again, as I said, you got to respect him for that.
I think he's 31. Do you think goalkeepers tend to last a bit longer in the professional game? Do you think it's too late for him to maybe make it his way in the Ireland squad or maybe get back to England if he wishes?
I don't know. You'd probably listen, if he's doing any of the media over the next few days, you can ask him that yourself. Again, I've only met him briefly today, and I'm sure we'll have more chats over the next few days and around the hotel and travelling. But he's enjoying his football, and you can't tell what the future holds for him, but I'm sure he's glad to be involved in the squad. We've had one or two League of Ireland players involved before, goalkeepers with the Irish squad, and they've always done well, and hopefully he'll enjoy it the next few days, and we'll take it from there.
So that's Roy Keane speaking to the media today on Shane Supple, and the question's been put to Roy Keane by RTÉ's Tony O'Donoghue. He spoke really nicely there about Shane Supple and the day, the moment. He says he remembers it vividly, but it does strike me that Roy Keane is the type of character, like, he had to go the hard road to forge a career in professional football. I mean, we have the stories about all the letters being written to the various clubs and not getting trials with any of them and really having to battle his way from Rockmount to winning a European Cup. I would imagine at the time he's thinking, what are you doing? Like, how can you turn down a career in professional football?
Yeah, I think there would be a huge element of bemusement there, and probably not just from Keane, from a lot of other people in the game who are in it for different reasons. And I mean, championship wages can be very good wages, and there's no doubt that I think the trajectory that Supple was on, that I think he would have made pretty good money. But regardless of not just saying, he would definitely would have gone all the way to the top or whatever, but still, he would have done well. And yeah, I think, but it must be said that I think Supple has always praised Keane for how he dealt with it at the time. And I think in a strange way, you read like Keane's books and various things, that he always seems to warm to character. You know, people who maybe come into his office and front up and say it and are forthright and follow their heart and do what they want to do, which is something that Supple did.
Says, I admired him for having the balls to make that decision. You think that's absolutely genuine?
I think it probably would. I think there would be bemusement. I'm not saying that he didn't go out of his room or talk to the staff and go, bloody hell, what's going on here?
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you ask me, would he prefer to be in a room with a Supple saying this or some lad whose agent has told him to go in and ask to leave, or, you know what I mean? Something like, you always sense that Keane struggled with players and particularly didn't like aspects of players. You know, players, well, you know, asking him who he was going to sign and this type of thing. Whereas Supple went in, had a purpose about what he wanted to do and chose to follow his heart and do it. And, you know, there's no sort of hidden story there. I mean, I think Shane Supple's always been pretty honest about how he felt and what he wanted to do. And the culture of professional football wasn't for him. And in some ways, you hear Keane speaking and the culture of professional football, he wouldn't be mad in it either in terms of the maybe some of the sharks and some of the people you might deal with, particularly even as you go down the leagues to an extent. So people didn't care whether their clubs won or lost. It'd be something that Shane would have spoken about, you know, with players in the dressing room, whether it be Ipswich or even on loan, who just weren't that bothered by the result. And he's, even since he's come home and got back, I mean, obviously his GAA career is well known, but even with Bowes, he's turned down full-time moves here to the better clubs here because he likes the community feel of Bowes. He says it's almost like a GAA ethos that everyone's rowing together. He trusts the people that are there. So actually, there are parallels between maybe some of the values they might hold in a strange and weird way, even if they may have sort of different destinations in mind for where they might be going. So I am delighted for Shane. He is 31, and as I think Tony pointed out in the question, in goalkeeping terms, that's young. I think he spoke a bit about it the other day. Does he want to, say, go back? And I think that's up for debate. And it's strange. It's always something that, like, he felt like he was homesick and wanted to live in Ireland and be around people. And that's why we should always seek to have something better here, because we'll have friends and people listening will have friends in any walk of life who just want to be at home. Like, they're just happier at home. They're better people at home, or they feel more comfortable at home. And, you know, the sad thing about football here is always based on going away. It's very natural and obvious reasons for that. And probably 99% of footballers want it. But there's some of them who would love to be home here if there was something here for them, the opportunity allowed it. And a Supple came home here and not with money or anything in his head. You know, it was other things in life. And the fact that he's managed to get into the Ireland squad, like, I'm delighted for him. And I sort of hope, but we always look at this in an opportunistic way. Like, what doors will this open?
I mean, we're already talking about
what will it do?
Go away again.
Yeah, and there's almost an element of, let's just sort of let him enjoy it, see what happens, and go from there. I mean, Graham Burke's situation is probably very different. Softball. They're two very different cases.
Well, let's get into the Graham Burke. He's obviously had a really good season for Shamrock Rovers, playing in a team that's really struggling. He still chipped in with 9 goals, I think, in 16 league games. Our own Jamie Moore of Off the Ball asked Keane about Graham Burke's displays recently.
I think if he'd said to him a few weeks ago, you know, you'd be involved in a couple of games with Ireland, I think he would have been delighted. And I suppose when you're an attacking player, all I would say from the, I suppose, this cameo role up at Celtic was, he certainly had maybe 3 shots on target, 3 opportunities, tested the goalkeeper. And if you're an attacking player, you go, oh, well done, you kind of had some sort of effect on the game. So we're pleased with that. And again, we look forward to seeing him over the next few days. But, you know, give the guy a chance as well. It's difficult when you step into national football. As much as you mentioned Turkey and we got young players coming in, I felt, even my own career, when I was playing at a decent level, probably took me 20-25 games at international level before I found my feet. So we also shouldn't be looking at these young lads and expect miracles from them. Let them learn their trade. Obviously, we want to be playing at the highest level, whatever country they're playing in. And when they come and play for Ireland and play in international football, give them a bit of a chance. And also, when I look at the young players coming through, what are the couple of lads who are, not young players, maybe players kind of new to the international scene, Turkey game being a prime example, I'd be looking more at the senior players helping them more than anything else. And sometimes it's the senior players will disappoint you more than the younger players. So these younger players need to be given a bit of breathing space. They need to see good examples around them, around the hotel, how you train, people like Seamus Coleman and people like that, how you train, how you play, and to help these lads who are new to international football. So the few players you've mentioned there in the last 10 or 15 minutes, give them a chance. Because like I said, it took me 20-25 games at international level before I felt I found my feet. So we need to give them a bit of a break.
That's pretty much halfway through Roy Keane's international career, isn't it?
Yeah.
Before he started to feel comfortable.
Exactly. I mean, he's spoken about that before. I mean, yeah, I think about Burke is, just very briefly on this, that, I mean, it's fantastic. But it also, the fact you're looking to the League of Ireland reflects that we don't have the depth of options in the UK that we've had before. And maybe going forward, we're going to have to be open to this type of thing, not being a novelty, but lads being brought in for maybe less competitive games to see what they can do. Because, I mean, that's just the reality of where we are right now.
Yeah, we are where we are. I want to get into Graham Hunter after the break, but there was a really interesting moment today, slightly spiky moment, when Keane was asked about David Gold. He's one of the West Ham co-owners. Mm. Talking about he wanted the new manager, which is Pellegrini, coming in to possibly raise the standard of Declan Rice's game so that he can be an established, classy, future England international.
Yeah.
Here's Roy Keane.
Can I ask you how surprised you were to hear David Gold challenge Manuel Pellegrini to turn Declan Rice into an England international?
Well, it's going to be pretty difficult if he's Irish. And he is Irish.
And
plays for Ireland, yeah.
And he's given every indication that Ireland is where he wants to play.
Yeah, because he's Irish. Yeah. Where else would he want to go? If you had a choice, Ireland or England? Pretty straightforward, isn't it? Ireland.
I know the fellow who asked the question. I'm not sure what his choice, Damien's choice, would be if given Ireland or England. But the Gold comment was sufficiently random. It just did strike me as someone who just wasn't aware of the tactic. I mean, I can't believe he wasn't watching Turkey play Ireland in March.
No, but you know? I agree with you completely. I don't think it was a real sly remark from David Gold. I think David Gold has no idea that one of his players has already played for an international side.
Yeah, I think you would look at some things that have happened at West Ham over the last year, couple of years, and not automatically assume just clarity of thought about everything that happens. You know, I'm happy to give them the benefit of the doubt, even if that in itself is possibly a bit of an insult.
I'd be surprised if David Gold knew he played against Turkey, but that it was only a friendly, so technically he can still play competitive football for England. I really don't think
he's not as paranoid as the rest of us, you know, in some strange. Just let he's here again, Declan, just leave him be. Just leave him at it.
Exactly.
You know?
This is similar to Darren Morgan, the call for Darren Morgan to be playing for England, despite the fact that he's already played, how many times for Jamaica, the Leicester City defender?
Yeah, exactly.
Is it Darren Morgan?
Wes Morgan.
Wes Morgan.
Yeah,
Wes
going back a while, yeah.
So, right. Look, I don't think he's going to be playing for England. We really hope Declan Rice doesn't end up playing for England. Right, listen, we're going to want to leave plenty of time for Graham. We'll get into that next.
Off the ball. This is News Talk.
Graham Hunter, good evening.
Well done, good evening.
How are things? It is Champions League week. I guess this is as excited as you could ever be in a football season.
I love the way that that is both accurate and mocking at the same time.
You're right. Right, you're on both counts.
You're right. I'm like a little puppy dog with two tennis balls.
Listen, over this part of the world, we're thinking these two teams have conceded 28 goals between them in their cumulative 24 Champions League games. So this has to be open. It has to be a classic. The goals have to flow. What are the feelings in Spain?
I think something similar in that you've quoted a statistic about goals conceded for Real Madrid, but I think you could be more broad brush under Zidane if you wanted to, which is that from day one until today, irrespective of better or worse performances, irrespective of the fact that there has been sort of modicums of strategy, the only thing that matters to him is that he puts his best 11 out on the pitch and that they outscore the other side. It is, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, although many people in Spain, particularly the haughty ones, even those who, journalists, analysts, ex-players, who actively support Madrid, they are very sniffy, very snooty at Zidane's idea that the basic idea is we'll score more than you, we'll outscore you, we'll always be front foot. If it's 3-2 with 90 seconds left, chances are we'll be looking to score another goal. And I think that's as fundamental to your idea about what kind of game will it be, from my side of the argument at least, as how many goals have we conceded, Dave. Madrid don't simply want to win. They don't simply want to outscore the other team. They want to play all night long. They're like little kids. Even though they're superstars, it's like, I'll take you on, I'll beat you, I'll make a better pass than you, I'll shoot from further distance than you, we'll outplay you and we'll outscore you. It might not be high church, but it's pretty damn entertaining.
Yeah, and it's not a million miles from the approach that Jurgen Klopp and his Liverpool team are going to take. When we sat down to watch the semi-final against Roma at Anfield, Graham, it was like Roma had never seen Liverpool play before. That they had just done absolutely no analysis and decided they were just going to play their game. And for the first 70, 80 minutes, we're just aghast looking at it going, how can a team set themselves up in such a ridiculous way against a team that plays the way Liverpool do? I'd imagine Real Madrid will have watched an awful lot of Liverpool, and it's going to be very different. Different to the point where they actually make personnel changes or just tweak the guys they already have in the team.
Well, unless I misunderstood your argument, I'm not convinced by it. I don't want to say, yeah, they'll do the same as Roma. Look, how do I say this well? Zidane's not stupid, nor is he naive. And over the 2.5 seasons, I think we have watched a little bit of tactical acuity developing. But his central pulse on how to win in Kiev won't be to learn lots about Liverpool. They'll have done their scouting. They're not old-fashioned, well, who's this mob? To dare challenge our world-class talents here, there and everywhere. Like, for example, if I was to pick the micro from your macro, everybody around Europe will say the words Marcelo can't defend or Marcelo goes walkabout 20 times between now and kickoff in Kiev. But do you think that's going to change? Not one iota. Will Ramos, instead of charging forward, looking to score from set pieces, taking a run at the other end of the pitch if he fancies it, do you really think that's going to change because he knows Marcelo will be out of position at left back, where Salah is at his strongest, running down the right channel, and Ramos is left centre back, even though he's right footed, should be doggedly paying attention to the dangers. Seriously, I meant what I said before. They won't be like Roma. You know, I expect both teams to score in over the piece because of who Real Madrid are, because of who they're staffed by, what their experience is, their ability to handle the emotions of the big night, and their ability to handle the temperature and stamina. Overall, I expect them to win. But some sort of look at Liverpool, look at their strengths, we'd better accommodate that, we'd better try to turn out a different style performance. There, I'm not buying it. And I think when you watch the 90 minutes in Olympic Stadium, I genuinely think we'll see the same Madrid as always with their idea that if we keep the ball off them, if we don't let the ball get to Firmino and Mane and Salah in dangerous positions, then our class on the ball will overwhelm them. That's what their idea will be.
So Graham, what do you think will, if it's not necessarily, you know, obsessing over Liverpool's strengths and weaknesses, like what do you think the factors will be that will sort of confirm the Madrid 11? Because, I mean, you may disagree, but maybe there's some debates there with, you know, Casemiro or Isco or Asensio or Bale or Benzema or what he will do. Like, what do you think the thinking will be in terms of how Zidane sets up, particularly his midfield department?
Well, look, Dan, first of all, I'll give you what I think the 11 will be. And by all means, you know, wave at me across the stadium on Saturday night if it's wrong. But they'll start off with Keylor Navas, Carvajal, Varane at right centre, Ramos at left centre, and then Marcelo. And the midfield will be composed of Casemiro in the middle, Kroos in the left, Modric in the right, and Isco floating around, not like a striker, not even like an out-and-out 10, I don't think, but linking all the divisions, being the joker player who can take, who can give, who can beat a man, who can pass crisply first time, can make a run beyond to arrive at the edge of the box. There's your four in midfield. And your front two, I think, will be Ronaldo and Bale. And I think that Asensio doesn't start because Isco is trusted as a more experienced player, a player who does more work back tackling and winning the ball, and who can drag Liverpool about before opening a game up, and Asensio comes on with the killer punches. I think your three main midfielders are a given. Unless there's a miracle, somebody has, you know, pulled a hamstring in training, your back five, including the keeper, are a given. So therefore, the two things that you were asking would be about Asensio or Benzema. People have asked me about, one of the commentators, ex-players who's preparing for the game, asked me about Kovacic. I think Bale has won his place. I think that the fact that it's a British team where height and pace and power are going to be things that Bale can match. And Benzema's form, although good, and although Ronaldo wants Benzema in every team he plays in, Benzema's goal record hasn't been terrific this season. And Bale's late run, where he's been mean and moody and pushy and has done what he should have done for months now, and cold-shouldered Ronaldo and toughed it out in terms of, this is my territory. I've really enjoyed seeing that, Dan. I think that, plus his goals, I think he's got 5 in his last 4. He's definitely got 8 in his last 9 or 10. I think that later on of form and grit, meanness, has won Bale's place. There's your 11, and I think that will be an 11 whereby they try to keep the ball off Liverpool. And although everybody's talking about, David started it by talking about goals conceded, both teams look like they'll score, I think the crux of the game is in the middle of the park, where I think Liverpool can be overextended, where three men can have to do too much work, as fit as Milner is, for example. And I think that over the 90 minutes and or extra time, which is something I think is a decent likelihood, I think that the midfield control that Madrid can exert and can keep Liverpool running in order to chase the conditions that creates their storm play where they go bang, 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 and I think Liverpool will score. I think the middle of the park is where class will tell and where the axis of the game will twist in Madrid's direction.
Speaking of the middle of the park and class that will tell, Graham, I want to ask you about Andres Iniesta before we leave you this evening. It was his final game for Barcelona at the weekend. There's obviously an awful lot of love for him all over Europe, including here in Ireland. We have a huge amount of appreciation for the skills that he's delivered on the world stage for so many years now. Where is he ranked in Spain, maybe outside of Barcelona? Because we know how much he's loved by the Catalan fans. But elsewhere in the country, when people talk about the man that got the winner for them in a World Cup final, I mean, how much is he feted and lauded across Spain?
I think you've named it, number one, David. If you talk about the broad church approval for Iniesta, the fact that he scored that goal, and then in something that I can't put into 4 or 5 words, this feeling in Spain about the greats all have something extra, whether it be elan or dignity or class, chutzpah, daring. Pick any of those, and then merge them with something very Spanish. So Iniesta scoring that goal in Soccer City and then revealing the jersey that said, you know, Danny Harkey is always with us. That combination of ideas that a great little man can seize his moment, bring the country to a place they've never been before, and remember a close friend who played for an enemy club. That means that whether you're talking about ex-players, current players, fans, media, Iniesta is largely rated as your greatest Spanish footballer. I don't think that many in Spain would rank him, for example, above Rafa Nadal. I think people have come to a conclusion over the years that Rafa Nadal is the number one sportsman. But the thing that has always touched me, and I saw on Monday morning, Xavi is my favourite Spanish footballer of all time. And I've often said to Xavi that I think you're number, and he will always argue with me, and argue vehemently, which probably means I'm wrong. But he wrote an open letter to Iniesta in AS newspaper. He was there on Sunday night. He was in tears at homage on Friday to Iniesta. Xavi was in tears when he watched all the testimonies in the old games. And Xavi's letter was, I've known that this is the best player in Spain since I saw him as a kid. And his words that I'll leave you with was that when Xavi was a young footballer in the same team as Pep Guardiola, and the buzz went up the grapevine in the club, there's this fantastic player in the youth sections that's a lot like you. Xavi writes in his open letter, I went to see you, and within 5 minutes I went, he used a word, joder, what are they talking about? This guy's nothing like me. He's 10 times better than me. Even as a kid, he could do this and that and the next thing and whatever. And Xavi, from that day to this, continues with the idea, David, that Iniesta is Spain's greatest ever footballer. And I guess if he's christening him as such, then who am I to argue?
It's a lovely way to leave our chat tonight, Graeme. One word, or two if you fancy Real. Who's going to win Saturday?
It'll be Real Madrid after a 3-3 draw. And it'll be settled in extra time as Liverpool tire.
Wow. We take that,
wouldn't
we?
Look forward to that one, yeah.
Graeme, brilliant. Thanks a million.
That's not a guess, lads. That's the truth.
It's a full-on prediction. Nailed on. Thanks a million, Graeme.
See you, lads.
Yeah, we take a 6-goal thriller in extra time.
That wouldn't be bad. Yeah. That could be hard on sort of coronary conditions. Yeah. But otherwise, I mean, in a strange way, you're thinking, you know, the form points to something high-scoring of that nature. And then maybe part of me, maybe more negative than Graeme, just thinks, God, it couldn't be that, could it? You know, that and somehow, as the final occasion comes round, some form of nerves or pragmatism or something kicks in. But it didn't really happen at the semi-final level. It didn't happen in this year's competition.
And if you go through both sides in the semis and the quarters, goals galore, four on against, which all points to it being a nil-all draw.
Yeah, exactly. You move to a neutral setting away from the home or away environment and the emotions or whatever that might stir. I mean, it might just end up falling somewhere in between, perhaps, but I'd definitely take the 6-goal thriller.
Okay. We have a little bit of time left, enough time to squeeze in a very interesting story about our old mate John Terry. So we'll be back.
Off the ball. This is News Talk.
All right, Dan's still with us for the remainder of the football show. John Terry's a stand-up individual. He's had some colourful moments over the years.
In his life, yeah. We mentioned the penalty earlier in Moscow and so on. But also, I wouldn't say not quite a reformed character, but the perception of him maybe, like he's Mr. Chelsea, but he's gone to Aston Villa. And I was at the Aston Villa game last week, the second leg against Middlesbrough. And everyone to a man afterwards spoke about JT, what a great influence he is on all the young players around the club. Jack Grealish, apparently, Terry's been a huge influence on him. I spoke to Conor Harahan, who mentioned them. You know, great influence. Steve Bruce, toxic dressing room. John Terry's come in, senior pro, showing people how to live. Great lad altogether, you know.
However,
one of the stranger transfer stories I've heard, anyway. Now, there's a couple of clauses here. Obviously, Villa have to beat Fulham in the playoff final on Saturday, which you would argue is possibly unlikely. I think Fulham are the better side, but Villa do have the know-how.
Anything can happen in a final.
Well, also, and they have the experience, it must be said, of Terry and a few others that you just wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah, true.
Fulham are the better side. I mean, on league table doesn't lie to the better side.
Yeah, and which is so far.
It has emerged that John Terry is in discussions about staying at Aston Villa, particularly if they stay up. But his contract could have a clause in it that he doesn't play in the two games against Chelsea, which probably has to be the craziest thing I think I've ever heard. I mean, we all have our feelings on lads not celebrating against former clubs. It's not really for me, although I think if the player has a special relationship with a club, I can sort of understand that. I thought Mo Salah handled it quite well, actually, in the semi-final. You know, a guy who was at a club for 6 months and, you know, played around five times and the fans didn't even like him. Him not celebrating, like, well, that's pretty unfortunate.
If Salah scored against Chelsea and didn't celebrate, I'd be questioning it.
Yeah, and you see, there is parallels of other stories where that's happened. But to not play, to have the young Jack Grealish who's sitting there, who's learned a lot from this guy, and he's saying, well, to be honest, yeah, I just really like this club and I'd rather not play against them.
So the substance in this, like, how much stock can we put in this story?
Oh, I'd believe that the sources are pretty good. You know, the journalists who are writing it are good operators. So I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt that it's been discussed. But I mean, like, John Terry, of course, did speak to other clubs while he was at Chelsea. I mean, this is what I just find the hilarity of the whole thing. It's a bit like, you know, Gerrard's relationship with Liverpool fans, even though he's, you know, talked about leaving several times, you know. And by the way, I wouldn't hold it against him because, you know, you should. You know, it's a short career and
shop
around.
Though.
But like, this is worse.
Myself and Richie were discussing it at the top of the show, painting together a hypothetical, unlikely scenario in terms of the odds against it.
Last game of the season.
Last game of the season, Villa needed a win or a point to stay up.
Yeah.
And it's Chelsea, but John Terry is in the stands.
He's not in the stands, he's on the microphone walking around the pitch again, like his long goodbye, you know? But like, John Terry, didn't he turn up at some stage in the last season at Chelsea for a rehab one time? Like, you wonder why Chelsea as a club is dysfunctional over a period of time. Like John Terry is injured. He's at Aston Villa, Bodymore Heath. I think they have very good facilities. And yet, he still needed to pop along to Chelsea, where apparently he sat in the stands, just arriving back in, like the old boy coming back to school or something, even though he left a couple of years ago. Like, why are you here, you know?
And is this an...
It's a long game. It's a long game, Dave.
Well, that was kind of my question. Legacy.
Legacy and...
Is he trying to copperfest on his Chelsea legacy? Is he... As you say, he's playing the long game when it comes to going back to the club as a coach or a manager or an ambassador.
Yeah, he's going to manage. If he goes down that route, then every Chelsea manager is going to have the shadow of John Terry looming over his shoulder until John Terry is the Chelsea manager.
But the thinking in his mind, if this is the story is true and if it comes to pass, is that for me to play against Chelsea will damage my chances of returning to the club as a coach in the future?
Bizarre. Now, there's another cynical take on this, of course, which would be that the story is entirely legitimate, that this is something that's been discussed, but it may not really actually happen. But for the legacy game, it's good for Terry that this is out there.
Yeah.
That actually he cares so much about Chelsea that he would contemplate doing this. And while it may not come to pass, and while they may all laugh it off in future and go, well, of course this is never going to happen. What kind of madness is this? Just the fact that this story is out there.
That it was merely under consideration.
Shows that once he does turn up, I mean, he'd rather not be doing this.
When
but he's just doing his job. He's just doing his job. So
this
could all be part of a shrewd master plan. But I wouldn't doubt that there's a sincerity in the reports. I wouldn't say this is a mad flyer at all. I'd say this is, you know, just looking at people who are writing it who would be connected in that region, not generally be far off with stuff.
A sensitive Liverpool fan has been in touch. That was an interesting 15 minutes on Madrid with Graham. Any chance you'll talk about Liverpool this evening?
Spanish football expert Graham Hunter.
He's living in Spain. We kind of did want to get the Madrid side of things from Graham. We also talked at length about how Real Madrid might set up to try and counteract the brilliance of Salah, Firmino
of Liverpool.
And Mane.
Yeah.
Plus, we talked about Liverpool for about 15 minutes with John Giles earlier. So feel free to podcast that or watch the video at youtube.com/offtheball.
No, Dave, be honest. It's part of an agenda. It's part of an agenda that has been perpetuated from this studio. And that's exactly what's happening. Let's be honest about it.
This studio is dripping with anti-Liverpool bias.
Yeah, that was all part of the plan. I'm glad we had that choreographed Graham Hunter 15-minute piece to wind up the Liverpool fans. Fantastic. It's all part of our plan. It's our spin.
It's been an interesting day, Dan. Thanks a million for joining us this evening. Tomorrow morning, O2BAM is live from 7:45 on YouTube. You can get us on Facebook as well. You can follow us on Twitter and you'll be able to watch it all. Adrian and Owen will be joined by Limerick midfielder Keane Lynch after a really interesting weekend for him last weekend, like win that win over Tipperary. And the one and only Bruce Grobbelaar is going to be in as well. So he'll be previewing the Champions League final. Yet more Liverpool talk.
He's probably here to talk about Madrid, I would hope.
He's probably going to spend the time talking about Real.
Abbas, you know, we've all made mistakes.
Tomorrow night, we're back from 7. Brian O'Driscoll's going to be in studio with myself and Ger. Crappy quiz as well, and we'll continue the build-up to an absolutely massive weekend of hurling action. Tom Dunn is up next. We'll chat to you tomorrow. Good luck.
Give him a ball and a yard of grass. He'll give you a move for the perfect pass. Give him a ball and a yard of spice. He'll give you a move with guilt like your eyes. Ra-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta.